Blog Talk Radio.
The opinions expressed on Wolf Dog Radio by our guests and participants of the audience are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of the production team of the hosts of Wolf Dog Radio. We are open to your ideas for future radio programs. Please feel free to email us with questions or comments at questions@wolfdogradio.com.
Good evening, friends. I'm Krista Ward, and welcome to Wolf Dog Radio. On this episode of Wolf Dog Radio, we will be visiting with the founders of Apex Protection Project. And we will be right back after these important messages.
Hello, this is Natasha Woodall, Vice President of Texas Wolf Dog Project and Shelter. We are an all-volunteer and donation-based 501c3 rescue and adoption facility dedicated to saving as many adoptable wolf dogs and northern breed dogs in the state of Texas, as well as surrounding areas. This is based off of available foster homes, suitable adoptive homes, and, of course, financial resources for veterinary care. We support responsible ownership and public education, as well as promoting education for other rescue groups, shelters, and animal control facilities concerning proper wolf dog identification, evaluation, and care. For more information on adoption, events, volunteer work, and how to donate, please visit our website at www.texaswolfdogproject.org or email us at info@texaswolfdogproject.org or visit us on Facebook. Thank you.
Hey, y'all. This is Jerry Emmelman, and you're listening to Wolf Dog Radio. Enjoy the show.
Tonight on Wolf Dog Radio, we are very excited to have Paula Ficarra and Steve Wastel from Apex Protection Project joining us to discuss the mission and goals they have set to further the education and advocacy of wolves and wolf dogs. Paula and Steve are the co-founders and directors of Apex Protection Project. Apex is a 501c3 nonprofit wolf dog rescue, education, and advocacy organization located in the high desert north of Los Angeles, California, against the Angeles Forest. Both Steve and Paula started working with wolves and wolf dogs at a local rescue about 8 years ago and decided just over 2 years ago to start Apex with the goal of focusing on their passion of education and advocacy. The goals of Apex Protection Project are to continue their quest of protecting wolves and wolf dogs through educational experiences, rescue, and advocacy, with the dream of living in a world where the wolf and all species are highly valued, protected, and respected for the balance they bring to the ecosystem and for the gifts they offer to humanity. Apex is not technically open to the public, but will schedule appointments when contacted far enough in advance, dependent upon their own schedules. I would like to welcome the founders of Apex Protection Project to Wolf Dog Radio. Hello and welcome.
Hi, I'm Paula Ficarra.
And I'm Steve Wastel.
And we're the co-founders and directors of Apex Protection Project. We're a 501c3 nonprofit wolf dog rescue, education, and advocacy organization. We started about 2 years ago. We've been working with wolves and wolf dogs for about 8 years, but we started Apex about 2 years ago. And we're located in Los Angeles in the northern, the high desert above Los Angeles proper, kind of up against the Angeles Forest.
Would you please describe your rescue as well as the rehabilitation and the care that you provide for your animals?
You want to go or you want me to do it?
You can do it.
Okay, sure. Sure. So we started Apex because we have angry animals because they want to eat. we started Apex because we really wanted to focus on really advocating and educating about the wolves in the wild, and that's where our passion really lies. We actually weren't really planning right away to become a rescue. We started out as an advocacy organization, and the rescue kind of just happened. We're on a rental property, And our landlord is absolutely amazing and loves the whole idea of us having our facility here right now. We're actually looking for a forever home in Malibu that we can open a full facility on with more animals that we can rescue. But we've decided to stay pretty small for now so that we can give the attention to the animals that we have. We have 7 rescues at the moment right now. They've come from all different situations and with different issues. Some have come with emotional and behavioral issues, of course, from different backgrounds, and some have come with physical issues, and some with both. And so we rescue wolf dogs, and the ones who really love being around people.
Is most of ours.
Yeah, actually, we're...
really surprisingly.
The ones that we have really love people. It's pretty surprising. And they become our ambassadors if they enjoy doing that kind of work, and they do a lot of outreach with us and meet a lot of people and help to start changing a lot of minds about wolves, a lot of people who don't really know the true gentle nature of wolves and the importance that they play in the ecosystem. You know, when they come in contact with one of our ambassadors, it really, really makes a difference.
So what would you say, would be a successful part of them becoming ambassadors? I know you say some of them come with issues and physical and emotional issues. How would you say they overcome that? Do you think it's a quick process once they adjust, or would you say that that takes a lot of time, a lot of interaction? How do you go about that with your rescues in order to make them become more comfortable and to become ambassador animals?
Well, it really depends on each animal. They're all individual, as you know, just like people. So, and they all come with different, you know, issues or baggage, just like people do too. So we really give them their space and their time, and we work with them one-on-one. The wonderful thing about us being so small is we have the time to really work with them. And most of our pack, you know, came to us with things that, you know, people said they were doing. They were escape artists, they were this, they were that. And we found that when they're put in the right environment, when they feel safe, they really tend to open up. Now, this is not the case for all. I mean, over the last 8 years between Apex and a different rescue, we've worked with probably over 50 wolf dogs. And some of them always remain shy. But we've been very lucky with our pack. They seem to open up really fast. Some of them obviously take longer than others, and we've worked with animals that have taken years and years and years. And then we've worked with animals that, you know, they get here with all of these so-called issues, and as soon as they're in a balanced environment, they just open right up. And it's actually quite fascinating. They also learn from each other. I mean, you know, Taboo, our first rescue, who's our alpha now, who was a wildling when we rescued her, is got a very kind of calm, balancing energy about her, and she really kind of takes them under her wing and helps them. So all of them, it's taken different amounts of time, but most of them have become really wonderful ambassadors because they just like being around people. One of our high contents, Merlin, who doesn't mingle with the people because he does like to pull at clothes and things like that, but they meet him through the fence, and he loves to be around people. He just really likes them.
Who are Thor and Loki?
Those are Norse gods. You don't know what Thor and Loki are? You don't even watch Marvel? Thor and Loki are characters, actually. They are, they should be called Abbott and Costello. They are two wonderful creatures, and we had never, you know, being in rescue, we never get puppies. We usually get them when they're 1.5, 2 years old. And people decided they didn't fit into their house, or, you know, for whatever reason. And Thor and Loki came to us, I see, with their sister, who now lives at a different rescue with some friends, because 3 of them was just a handful. They came to us at 3.5 weeks old from a backyard breeder that they was confiscated. And she, their mother was also confiscated. She had been bitten in the neck by one of the other breeding females. They were in a really awful, awful situation in a backyard that was just, I can't even describe how awful it was. But the two females had gotten into a fight, and their mother had been bitten in the neck, and the breeder had not taken them to the vet because she was afraid she was going to be in trouble because she was, you know, doing a lot of illegal things. And it became systemic, and she was feeding them, and she should have been about 90 pounds. She weighed about 45. She was actually dying when she was feeding them. So they were taken away by a friend and another rescuer, and she took the mother to the vet, who's doing beautifully right now. She
took her to intensive care.
Intensive
where she
care.
Stayed for about a week and a half.
Yeah, she was a long time, and but now she's happy ending. She survived, and she's living in Sonoma, and she's got a pond and a boyfriend, and she's doing great. And the three puppies were brought to us, and we, like I said, never raised puppies, so we're like, So we quickly scoured the internet and called everybody we knew in the wolf world and asked for formulas and different things, and we put it all together, and we ran around Target looking for baby bottles with all the other parents and all the different things to mix this formula. And we started to, we were up every 2 hours and every 3 hours and every 4 hours for like 3-4 months feeding them, bottle feeding them. They had every kind of parasite possible. It just was a long year. But the first 3 months, we didn't get any sleep whatsoever.
I think every parent knows that feeling.
Yeah. our hats went off to all parents. You know, fortunately, ours was only about 3 months long until they were eating solid food. But they're a year and a half now, and there are two big, healthy boys. They still have a few stomach issues here and there that we're working with, but they're very, very healthy. They're very happy. They're joined at the hip. And
they're mega ambassadors. They just love people. And they just, whoever meets them is just so touched by them. Matter of fact, one of our volunteers who just recently started went down to South America for a vacation and came back with a tattoo of Thor on her shoulder. She's so in love. They have this effect on people.
They really do. And they have been, you know, we got to raise these puppies from the beginning. So all of the knowledge that we'd learned along the way was put into play. You know, these are two, I mean, they're low-content wolf dogs, but you can, a baby could put their hand in their food and take their ball away when they're eating. You know, I mean, they're so beautiful with people because we had all of our volunteer team working with them. We worked on every aspect of socializing them and keeping them well-balanced, and they are just two of the happiest campers I've ever met, and everyone loves them.
That is wonderful work that both of you did, kind of reviving them. And you mentioned that you had to give, I guess, some supplements to them due to their poor nutrition in the beginning. What about your other animals on the property? Do you have to supplement anything with them, or how are they fed as well?
Yeah, so, I mean, our big priority, and again, we're very lucky because we are smaller right now, so we can give them that you know, that support, the nutrition and everything that they need so that they end up, hopefully, our goal is to keep them out of the vet's office as much as possible. But our seniors receive a glucosamine, MSN joint supplement, you know, once they reach, you know, middle age, just to continue to support their joints and everything into their older age. The animals who have digestive problems, we've actually noticed in our time with working with wolf dogs, a lot of them tend to have some interesting issues, health issues, which are kind of surprising, and a lot of them are digestive. But the ones who do have sensitive stomachs or issues with digestion, you know, we try to find what works best for them, but we also supplement them with, you know, probiotics and such. And then they all receive their omegas for joints and health. Really it's me who we had an experience with an animal years ago who ended up with a puncture in his stomach, and we're not really sure where that puncture came from, but we've also worked with an exotic vet who has had several incidences where he's had animals come in from punctures from bone, you know, and because, you know, we're feeding them domestically without the fur and all that stuff to protect their inner stomachs and intestines from the bone. We just don't want to play with fire, so we give them a bone supplement instead of actually giving them the actual raw bone with the meat. And I personally feel a lot safer about that.
Well, most of the meat that we get doesn't have the bone in it because most of it's donated from Walmart. So it's they eat like filet mignon, tri-tip, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Lot of times it doesn't come with the bone anyway, so they get a bone supplement.
Do the best we can to make sure they're getting the nutrients that they need. So in the morning, we give them, because they're wolf dogs, we give them raw meat in the morning, and then at night they get a really high-quality holistic kibble to fill in any other nutrients that they need.
So it's Origin or Canum.
And another topic I really wanted to touch on with you guys is you mentioned how friendly and people-oriented that your critters are. So what about educational events? They're very prominent on your webpage. So what school and community events do you participate in?
Sure.
Well, we really feel that, you know, our up-and-coming generation is the key, you know, to really get in front of our youth and be able to really teach them about the wolf and their importance in the ecosystem and maybe change a little bit of the opinion as these kids are growing up and becoming our new leaders and, understanding the wolf better, you know, and not being afraid of it in the way that a lot of us adults are. So we really do focus on school presentations. We make our presentations free, first of all, so that we can go to every school regardless of whatever their budget may be. And, you know, we do as much outreach to the community as we can. And so, that's the most important thing to us is to be able to really teach our youth especially about the wolf and their importance in the ecosystem. The cool thing is that we're finding, you know, 8 years ago when we started, you would ask even, you know, little ones in, you know, first or second grade, what do you think about wolves? And their answers have changed so much. They would say, oh, they're scary, they're ferocious, they're vicious. Now we ask them what they think of wolves, and we're getting completely different answers about them. Oh, they're cute, they're snuggly, they're strong, they're wise. They're all of these Hollywood movies that are coming out that are depicting wolves in a more positive light, like Jungle Book and all of that. You know, they're seeing the wolf for what it really is, and it's really exciting and helpful to us in a way. But and then we bring our ambassador pack with us, and if it's a large group, you know, of course, because wolves and wolf dogs are so shy, the kids don't interact with them because that's just more energy than they can handle. But you know, in little groups, a lot of times they can have that interaction one-on-one with them, and they are just completely fascinated and over the moon when they get to meet the ambassador pack. And, you know, you just hear them saying, that was amazing, it was the best day of my life, things like that. And that's when we know that all that we're working for, we feel really good about the difference that we're making.
What is this that I hear about the Sedona Wolf Week? Are you guys going to be able to host or co-host in that?
Yeah, so Sedona Wolf Week is, last year we went to Sedona with Julia Huffman and her movie Medicine of the Wolf. It was screening at the Sedona International Film Festival, and she invited us to come with some of our ambassadors and do a Q&A at the end of the movie. So we took four of our ambassadors to Sedona, and we stayed at a friend's house at the time, and we were supposed to do one screening of the movie, and they ended up selling four sellout screenings with a list that was going on, and they could have probably sold four or five more. Everyone was really, really open to listening and to watching the movie, and then meeting the pack and hearing about the plight and of the wolf, and just so we got to speak at the end of the movie, and it was so exciting. We were eating at a restaurant, the only restaurant that was let us in with 13 people and dogs, that was called Paco Diablo, and it's run by a Native American tribe, it's owned by a Native American tribe, and they have a big, beautiful deck outside on the veranda, and they even serve dog menu, which was interesting. So while we were eating lunch, someone mentioned, maybe we should do Sedona Wolf Week. People are so open to it here. And we all kind of chuckled and said yes. And flash forward to this April, we are co-hosting with an organization called Plan B to Save Wolves and an Apex Protection Project. We're putting on this event, and we've got speakers, Mark Cook from Wolves of the Rockies. We've got Seth Wilson from the Blackfoot Challenge. We've got Casey York from Trap Free Montana. We have bands playing. We have art. We have music. We're taking six of our ambassadors with us, which is a huge undertaking. It's a four-day event. We're actually there for 7 days. And our pack love it because they get to hike in the mountains and swim in the water and do all kinds of really fun stuff. And they get to we get to educate the public. We're doing about 3 school presentations. We've got some movie screenings. We've got meet and greets with the pack. We've got fundraisers. And, of course, all of these amazing speakers that are coming to speak about the plight of the wolf. And we have a Native American ceremony to open the event. So this is our first annual. We've already got people for next year, like huge wolf advocates that are talking about coming. And the idea really is just to open this up to – there's a lot of wonderful organizations doing things like meetings about wolves. But what we wanted to do was really introduce the general public, so it's more of a 101. We also have a panel that Seth Wilson is going to be hosting. Seth Wilson has been working for 30 years with coexistence with wolves and livestock and ranchers and had some beautiful success. So we're going to do a panel, and we've invited the livestock community. We've invited Fish and Wildlife. We've invited other ranchers and different things to come and sit and have a really productive, safe conversation about how we can all coexist together and bring everyone to the table. So we're really excited about it. And I think it's going to be a fantastic event. And that's in April, between on the 20th to the 23rd.
Yeah, and of course, if anybody's really interested in this, they can go to our website, apexprotectionproject.org. And all the information there, Poco Diablo Resort, who is our sponsoring host, is offering a discount to their rooms. And all the information's right there.
Six ambassadors. That's amazing that you can.
We just looked at, and we're trying to find a wonderful donor to help us pay for it. But we're looking at a very specific RV. We just looked at it yesterday, and our board is working on trying to find someone to help us with it. But it's actually called a Thor Motorhome Outlaw, and it has a garage on the back. So we could retrofit 8 kennels in the back there, and it leads right into the RV. It's not a trailer. So we would be driving with the animals in air conditioning. So we could use it for rescue. We could use it for our school presentations. We've been looking for a corporate sponsor to put their banner on the side of it, sponsoring what we're doing with the free school presentations. So we're fingers crossed. We're still working on it, but we may have a vehicle that we can transport 8 animals in rescue or in presentations across the country and be able to sleep in the same vehicle with them, because a lot of times when you go on rescue, you drive 24, 36 hours without stopping. You have to keep switching drivers because you've got this poor animal in a kennel in the back that you obviously can't take out because you don't know who it is or what they behave like, their behavior is, until you've worked with them. So you have to drive. But in this particular case, we could actually stop and take a nap, and they'd be in there with us. They'd be nice and cool. And it would be a vehicle. So we're working on that, but we have other options if that doesn't work.
Well, speaking of your rescues, could you share a few of the wolf and wolf dog rescues and placements that you've worked with?
Yes, I'm going to let Steve tell the story of our very first rescue, Taboo, because he tells it so well.
I'm going to have to abbreviate it, or the show will be really, really long.
It's an epic story, but it's really good.
We were actually working with another wolf rescue at the time, and we were complete rookies. We had no idea what we were doing, and we had been working with the 16 animals that were rescued at the rescue, and we got a call one day saying that this black wolf was tied up in, first she was in a shelter and she was going to be euthanized, and we called all the shelters and there was no black wolf dog there, and then the guy finally called again and said, well, actually, no, my mother lives on the street and the animal is tied up. My mother has a friend that lives on the street, and no one was giving us the right information, And so Paula was driving the chiropractor. I was in my sweatpants covered in cat hair with half a beer because I've been laid up in bed. And we get a phone saying she's tied up in a backyard and they've moved out and they've left her there. And we were like, well, we can't let this happen. So we found out the street she was on, but for some reason they would not tell us the address because the lady that lived there did not want to tattle on the neighbors and she would not tell the address. So, of course, we went down this epic street up in Northridge looking for this houses that were for sale because we didn't know, you know, where she was. So we're knocking on doors and we're walking along and we bumped into all kinds of incredibly crazy neighborhood people that were telling stories about this and that, but no one had seen a wolf dog. And we bumped into it was like an odyssey. We bumped into a Native American gentleman who told us all about his diet and why he was so healthy at the age of like 90. And that's taboo, by the way, telling one of the puppies off. And so finally we walked along and walked along and walked along. And I finally found a lady who knew where this black wolf dog was, and we found the house, and we went to the house, and at the time I was driving a Mustang, and I had no idea about really rescuing or anything, and we found this house, and Paula went up and knocked on the door, and the guy came out, and it was true, he was moving out, he hadn't actually moved out, and Taboo was 1 year old, and she had been in the backyard kind of surrounded by cinder blocks, so she'd never really seen a lot of animals before, and she was too big for them to walk, and he had just lost his job, and his family couldn't handle her, and they were moving into a place where they couldn't keep her. And so we said, well, we'd be happy to take her. And so he said, okay. And he brought out this beautiful black creature that was like a kite on the end of a leash, dragging him down the driveway, and she rolled over and gave us her belly. And we said, okay, well, then we'll just take her. And we put her in the back of the Mustang, which we would never, of course, do these days with knowing what we know. But lucky for us, and she was very sweet. She just had really bad gas, that's all.
Yeah, and I got to sit in the back seat, so, which was great.
And we drove her up, and she came to the rescue. And then we started bringing her home because she had not seen another dog or another animal, really, and she was so fear aggressive. And it was interesting because, you know, we know a lot now. If back then we didn't really know too much, and I think that our ignorance and our innocence actually played into the fact of her being this well-balanced animal because we believed anything was possible, you know. And a lot of times when you see an animal that's so aggressive, a lot of people say, no, she's aggressive, just, you know, keep her away from people. And we didn't know any better. And we actually contacted Nicole Wilde, who's a dear friend now, and we read her books, and we learned everything we knew, really, from Taboo. And we started to bring her home because she had to be spayed. And we had her we ate our food. She was in our one-bedroom apartment in Sherman Oaks. It was this tiny little apartment with two cats that lived in the bedroom. And Taboo lived in the living room, and we had this giant metal gate in the middle between the kitchen, and so she couldn't get to the cats, and because she kept trying to, you know, obviously she wanted to get to the cats, and we kept walking her every day and trying and learning, and slowly but surely she started to trust, and with some wonderful guidance from Nicole and some of her books that we read, we started redirecting her energy and teaching her to trust and learn. And she literally taught us everything we knew. And for a year and a half, we slept on a sofa bed in the living room because we couldn't leave her alone. We had our windows boarded up. We had cameras in the house. We had, so she wouldn't jump out. We had to have babysitters when we went to work. But they couldn't take her for a walk because she was too unruly on a leash. And about a year and a half later, she ended up sleeping with the cats, going on hikes off leash around other animals, and completely changed. And there was a moment we used to go to a place called Runyon Canyon, which is a big hiking place in the center of Hollywood where everybody goes with their dogs. And we took her every day on leash, even though she was kind of dog aggressive, and we kept redirecting. And finally, she started just walking past dogs and not being aggressive. And then one day I said to Paula that, you know, one day she's going to walk through here off leash. And we laughed, you know. We were even going to buy a house, and we were thinking of dividing it down the middle because the cats would have to be on one side and the wolf dog would have to be on the other. And then a year and a half later, there we are walking through Runyon Canyon, and Taboo is off leash and playing and being friendly, and her recall was wonderful, and she stayed with us all the time, and she started sleeping with the cats, and now she's our wise alpha, and it was just such a beautiful transition. We learned as much from her as she did from us. I mean, in fact, I think we learned more from her than she ever learned from us.
It was amazing to watch her when we got the 3.5-week-old puppies, to watch her instincts kick in and to watch her actually teach, you know, take these puppies under her wing and teach them a lot of etiquette in raising these pups. And we just look at each other in amazement at just this creature who, you know, she's come so far and been through so much, and yeah, she's quite amazing. So.
And she's really taught the rest of the pack. I mean, she taught the puppies. She taught Kona. She's now teaching Riggs.
Our newest rescue,
our newest
who is
rescue.
8 months old when we got him, and an absolute wildling who reminds us a lot of her when we first got her.
Mm-hmm.
And she's really just the most wonderful leader and teacher. And the way that she teaches them is in this very centered, grounded place, you know. It's really amazing to watch. But, you know, then we have Sarge, who we rescued last year in June from Oregon. And he was an interesting case because he's this very large animal who he's 7 years old. And he had climbed up. He was with a family living in a backyard, and he had climbed up on a child's jungle gym. And as he was coming down the step ladder, he lost his balance and fell, and his leg got caught in the rungs and then snapped. And so he ended up with this severely broken leg. And the family was in this huge transition of separating and moving out, and, you know, with adult kids that needed to find their way as well, and they couldn't keep the animals because of all of this. And they looked to, you know, we belong to a large group of rescues around the country who work together on a regular basis to try and help place animals everywhere. And he was brought to the rescue group's attention. And, you know, we didn't really feel like we had the room, but we had our eye on him. And, of course, he's on our coast, so we felt like, you know, if nothing could happen, we would maybe be a last resort, and we waited and the date for the family to have to take him. I guess what ended up happening was they couldn't afford the surgery that he would need for his leg to be repaired, so their vet suggested just putting him on a pain med, an anti-inflammatory, and keeping him isolated so he couldn't move. So they put him in a small kennel, and the only place they could keep him at the time was in the backyard of the house that they had moved out of. And they were coming back daily to get him out, to go to the bathroom and to have some food and then put him back. But he was really in isolation in this kennel by himself for about a month while they desperately tried to find a home for him. So, you know, time was ticking. He was supposed to be taken to the pound on a certain day, and the days were getting closer. And so I checked back in with the network, and I said, has anybody shown any interest? Is anybody talking about maybe being able to take this animal? And no one had. And
everybody also knew that it was going to be a very expensive surgery.
Really expensive. And you know, of course, we all know that, you know, as rescues, we all depend on the donations and function off of that. And a lot of us don't have a lot of money for that kind of a thing. But we just couldn't. You know, that as he had 3 days left, and I looked at Steve and I said, we've just got to take a risk and take this animal.
Every day she kept looking at me and going, look at that face, look at that face. And I was like, how are we going to afford this? How are we going to do this?
And we said, no, you know what, we'll just jump out on a limb and it'll happen. We'll make it happen. So we contacted the family and said, you know what, we'll meet you halfway. We'll take him, we'll bring him home, and we'll see what we can do. And so we brought him back. And we were actually able to raise his surgery alone with a discount, with a nonprofit discount, was $10,000. And then another couple of thousand on top of that for the aftercare. Plus, we needed to raise money to build him his kennel. So it was a huge endeavor. But it was so worth it.
When we reached out, you know, people from Facebook, I mean, we raised about $3,000 or $4,000 from Facebook alone. And then one of the people that we met in Sedona just said, how much does he need? What does he need? And she took care of him. And she's become his grandma, so
she's his sponsor.
She's his sponsor now. Mm-hmm. And he's going to Sedona actually to meet her. And again, he was just one of those creatures that came into our life that is so social. I mean, he loves people. He loves being around people. He loves coming into the house. He doesn't get along with all of the pack yet, but Thor and Loki are his new friends, and it's amazing to watch him play because he's a little old for them, he tries to dominate them, but they don't submit, but they won't be dominant back, and they're just playful, and just watching him learning to play again and learning to run. I mean, he was on the table for almost 6 hours. He had a titanium plate put in his leg. It was really badly damaged, and plus the fact he'd been, you know, living with it for 2 months before. And, you know, now he's actually running. He chased a squirrel
the other day. Yep, for the first time. I mean, we kept saying, you know, in a year he's going to be running in the hills. In a year he's going to be running in the hills, and it's not even a year yet. And the other day we took him for a hike, and he took off, like, darting across the hills after this squirrel.
And he's 119 pounds. He's not little.
It was amazing. I mean, it just brought tears to our eyes. We were so happy to see him recovered and living life. It's really good. So... And I guess
donations are a major part that a lot of people forget about that are so helpful to the sanctuary. Then this is a wonderful story how you put that money to use. And I had also, speaking of donations, I had read a little bit about something called Roxy's Birthday Wish. Can you tell us a little bit about
that? Oh, yeah.
Little Roxy.
Well,
she really put us on the map. I mean, she changed the way that we were able to operate. She, in fact, Sarge would never have got his donor if it wasn't for Roxy. You want to tell Roxy's story?
Well, just through a series of events, you know, this little 7-year-old girl for her 8-year birthday, wanted everyone to make a donation to, you know, a nonprofit of her choice. And she loves wolves. The wolf is her favorite animal, and so she wanted to help save wolves. And she found Apex, she found us, and she saw our website, and she heard about us, and she really liked what we were doing. And with the support of her family, she started our, you know, campaign. So we set up a campaign for her, a birthday campaign, and she just, Roxy rocked it out. she just really blasted it out there and let everybody know that's what she wanted, and everyone was so moved by her mission that she raised $2,000 for us, and knowing that we were in preparation to go to Sedona and with Julia, and that's
and not
the
knowing
we
how we
were going to
go. We didn't know we could afford it. But
I mean, a lot of times we just take a leap of faith because we don't know how we're going to make something happen, and we just go for it, but, you know, because of Roxy, we were able to take the animals to Sedona and in the process reach over 1,000 people educating about wolves. And she actually came with her family. Her family brought her out so she could advocate with us, and it was really, really special.
She came on stage with us in every school, and we did a presentation at the Performing Arts School, which is like a huge, giant theater, and Roxy came there, and we honored her every event, and it was... it was really special, and she's still part of our group, and she travels with us. She's going to be in Sedona with us again, and she's going to be a star. She's a little rock star. She's a very special young lady.
That is a wonderful story, and that is amazing how someone in a younger generation is really pushing that. Look, wolves are important. We need wolves.
She really blew our minds. I mean, I think that was really the first time that we met someone of that age with that kind of passion and understanding of what needs to be done, and really wanting to make a difference and believing in herself enough and knowing that she has enough of a voice as a child to make that kind of a difference. And that's something that we always encourage in our school presentations too. And, you know, when we talk to any young group, you know, it's really, we try to really talk to them and let them know that they have a voice. And it's so amazing to us that, you know, we all can sign petitions and we all can write our politicians and everything, but it's so interesting how the politicians react when someone of that age takes the time to speak out. You know, they get heard. And I don't think young people realize how important their voices are, so we really do try to encourage that.
Do you have any mentoring programs?
Well, we, you know, that's always been one of the most important things for us, but as we've been growing and developing, it hasn't been one of the more, important things on the list. We have other things that we really need to get established to support APEX first, but our main goal is, we want to have a junior volunteer program because...
We started one last year.
Yeah,
it
went
successful. Really
well. And you know, they're young, and of course their parents have to come with them, and it's not an intense volunteer program. It's more educational and exposure, and mainly getting the kids to unplug for a day and to get into nature and to spend time with their families in a really fun environment, doing something different and working, you know, interacting with these very special animals and connecting with nature on a different level. And so they come, you know, we teach them how to feed the pack and they help prepare the food and they get to scoop poop and they get to do a little bit of community service and maybe a project. We teach a little bit about wolves and it's a full, they go on a hike, you know, with the wolves, so they get out and into the hills and exercise. And
we actually stopped it during the winter because it's very, very cold up here and it's hard for the little ones. But yesterday we actually did a wonderful program. It was a mother and daughter program. We had 17 people, mothers and daughters, and it was really like a school presentation, but it was here. And they got to interact with the pack and ask questions, and we talked about wolves in the wild. They learned about wolf dogs, and it was a really special day, and it was very grounded, and it was a lot of feminine energy. I think I was there's one little boy and me.
Oh, so into it, too, yeah.
But yeah, it was a wonderful day.
Although I have to say, my favorite is just recently we had this 12-year-old boy decide to make us his charity project for his bar mitzvah.
Ben Cohen.
So
yeah.
He came out with his friend. And these two 12-year-old boys, you know, with their moms, spent the day with the wolves. And, you know, I mean, where would a 12-year-old boy rather be than in front of the TV playing video games on a Saturday, right? Or checking his cell phone. And they didn't check their cell phone once. And by the end of the day, and we didn't even prompt these kids to say this, the boys were like, this is way more fun than playing video games. And we all just looked at each other and went, yes, we did it. Mission accomplished. It was really cool.
What exactly is required for someone to volunteer at APEX?
Time and patience and a car. We have, actually it's interesting, we have 7 animals here and we have about 15 volunteers. Most of them are very busy. But really what's required is the time and obviously the love. I mean, it's got to be about giving. Because, you know, a lot of times people come because they need to be away from everything. And we found that, you know, sometimes that doesn't really work as a volunteer. What we're really looking for here is someone who really wants to make a difference, who really cares about animals. And unlike a lot of rescues, we're very public in the sense that we go out a lot. So a lot of our volunteers are actually pretty dynamic people. They're able to speak in public and do all that kind of thing. But the most important thing is... really the time, because these animals, you can't just walk into a kennel and immediately start working with them. You have to be here for enough time for them to trust you and to bond with you, and then they can start going into the kennels, and then they can start working with the animals. So it's really kind of, it's hard because a lot of people come and they really want to give, and then they find out how difficult it is because it's not just snuggling animals. You know, it's really hot up here in the summer. It's really cold in the winter. There's a lot of physical activity. So a lot of people come, and they last a few weeks, and then they kind of fade. But we have 15 people that do come on a semi-regular basis. And so, I'm sorry.
His phone is making
a
crazy noise.
My phone just went off in the middle of that.
Turning his phone off.
I apologize. So really, it's really time. And the love for the animals and the patience to actually grow and learn about them. Because, you know, people think it's not as glamorous as, obviously, I'm sure you know, but people think it's, you know, a lot of hard work and a lot of time just spending bonding with these guys and teaching them to trust. And that just takes time.
We really, really appreciate you guys sharing everything with us. I think that you're doing wonderful work. I can't express to you enough that what you are doing is so important and so needed. It was a pleasure to have both of you on the show. Would you like to add anything before we close tonight?
We're just really honored that
you
reached out to us and that you wanted to spend some time talking to us tonight. We really appreciate it, and we love what you guys are doing too. So hopefully, you know, our whole goal is we really believe in working together, you know, and the more that we can all work together for this one mission and making a difference, the more strength we have, you know.
Seems like the rescue community is, you know, sometimes separated, whereas the hunters and the people that want to kill wolves seem to have a united front. So our whole goal and our hope is that we can all come together and, you know, really push forward and stop this killing.
Absolutely. And for anyone who wants to come and support, I do want to reiterate that you will be co-hosting the Sedona Wolf Week, and that is held April 20th through the 23rd in Sedona. I want to make sure that anyone who can and will can be a part of that with you guys. I think that's very important. And like I said, we just really appreciate all that you do. And thank you both for being on the show tonight. And if anyone has any extra information that they would like to reach out to you about, they can reach you at your website at www.apexprotectionproject.org. Thank you guys so much.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
You too. What an amazing interview. It was such a pleasure and an honor to speak with Paula and Steve. It is a very rare person who volunteers to help, and rarer still to have someone give up their life and rearrange it, conform to it, and devote their lives to a cause, especially a cause that is near and dear to the heart and soul of Wolf Dog Radio. Paula and Steve, if there is anything that we at Wolf Dog Radio can do to assist you, we stand ready. We will be right back after this message from Project Coyote. This week's message is from Kelly Hendrick, a predator-friendly rancher.
Standing here in Yellowstone National Park makes me think about, you know, you're in a place like this where you can see, you have the opportunity to see wolves and foxes and mountain lions and just all the carnivores, and it's such a rare opportunity to get to see that anymore. And when I think about the wildlife killing contest and the fact that people are just going out and killing these animals indiscriminately in hopes of, they think they're protecting their livestock, but we know it doesn't work. So it's basically a mission of revenge. And for the people that enjoy seeing those animals out in the wild, to take that away from them doesn't seem fair. And the animals themselves have an intrinsic value and intrinsic right to be where they were there first, before the livestock. So I think it's up to ranchers to learn how to live with the wildlife that was there first. Because where does it end? You start killing predators because you're afraid they're going to attack your livestock, which oftentimes is unprotected. And then you kill the other grazers because you don't want to share grazing land. And then you have to kill all the pests because the carnivores aren't there to control their numbers anymore, like ground squirrels. And pretty soon you've cleared out all the wildlife out of these areas. And we're going to have one place left in North America to see wild animals, and it's going to be Yellowstone National Park. And it would just be sad to ruin the rest of the states when you can have an opportunity to have healthy ecosystems and livestock that are sharing the land. And it's completely possible. And as my husband and I are predator-friendly ranchers and have cows that calve out in pastures with coyotes, and we have no problems. So it can be done, and it can be done with wolves, and it can be done with mountain lions, and it can be done with all the predators. And it just takes an amount of education and patience and tolerance to allow the rest of the people that don't have livestock and enjoy wildlife to have the opportunity to see them in the wild.
This is Ian Dunbar, and you are listening to Wolf Dog Radio.
Good evening. This is Greg Largent. I'm a co-producer of Wolf Dog Radio. Deanna Moose, who is the owner and lead producer of Wolf Dog Radio, and I felt the need to say something tonight regarding the horrific circumstances that took place yesterday in Olympia, Washington, which involved a three-year-old boy that had one of his arms amputated after sticking his arm through a fenced kennel area at his home. We're not talking about the rights or wrongs of people having canines or any breed with small children in the home. While that is an issue, for us, that is not the issue at hand. We would like to point out that there comes with any animal ownership the responsibility of providing a setting whereby the animals and humans of any age are not in harm's way from each other. Containment or housing of any animal that does not allow for direct contact if small children live in or near the property is, in our opinion, always required. Secondary fencing of some kind may also be required. We do not endorse the use of chaining or tethering of any kind as a means of primary containment. If chaining or tethering is required in an emergency situation, competent adult supervision the entire time it is used must be provided, or kennel the animals as another option, or find another option. Please, go take a look at your animals that you have that are in need of containment or that are in a housing situation on your property. Think of what if a young child were to approach unattended or any human approached without the owner's permission and supervision. The time to think of this is now. To make corrections or adjustments to your containment requirements, which will prevent another tragedy like this from happening. No matter where you may live, whether it's a rural or city setting, what country you may reside in, or what type of kennel or containment is being utilized. Supervision of young children is always a must. With outdoor containment, such things as dig-outs, dig guards, cup-ins, double gate entries, or other means to provide for the safe enrichment and housing of a companion animal of all breeds may be required. The expense of doing so is a small price to pay. Remember that the animals have no choice about where they live. It is a human responsibility to provide for their enrichment and to provide for their safety and for the safety of everyone around them. Please think ahead. No one thinks it can happen to them until, sadly, one day it does. We at Wolf Dog pray for the speedy recovery of this boy. May the angels look upon him and assist in a speedy recovery. Thank you, and please inspect your containment and see if there's anything you can do to make it better. Thank you.
And now it's time for Wolf Dog Radio News.
It's time for WDR News with Deb Selleck.
Hello, everyone. This is Deb with Wolf Dog Radio News. Tonight we have two new items to share with you, the first one coming all the way from the UK. Before I get into that, I'd like to give a big shout-out to all our Wolf Dog Radio supporters, and we'd like to ask that the good reviews keep on coming. All right. Wolf Watch in the UK was established in 1993 by the founder, Tony Highway, whose initial involvement with the wolf conservation started with the rescue of a pair of wolves from a closing zoo in Warwickshire. From these small beginnings, Wolf Watch UK has gone on to provide a sanctuary for over 30 displaced wolves to date. Our wolves normally get or arrive here as a consequence of dominance fights, zoo closures, and excess breeding. Without our help, many of these magnificent animals would have probably been euthanized. The Wolf Watch Center is located in approximately 100 acres of remote wooded valley in Shropshire and is staffed by a team of dedicated volunteers. Wolf Watch UK is a private membership wolf conservation group. Access to the project is strictly via our Adopt-a-Wolf membership or approved wolf conservation groups and with permission to bring visiting parties during prearranged days. We are somewhat unique in our ethos as it is based entirely around the welfare of the animals in our care and to provide them with sanctuary. We refuse to exploit them for monetary gain. We do not operate along the conventional lines of being a public paying zoo-style attraction, but rely solely on a membership subscriptions, donations, fundraising, and our Adopt-a-Wolf program. There's also photography days, guided tours, and associated events. Our wolves have been used in the making of many educational TV documentaries, including some of the prestigious ones presented by the BBC's Sir David Attenborough and other renowned documentary film producers. Some of our wolves have also appeared in films and television series. However, they're not trained to act. They're seen as wolves being themselves, doing things that wolves do, in as near as natural habitat as possible. Wolf Watch UK is a nonprofit organization dedicated to the rescue, welfare, and conservation of displaced wolves from captive situations across Europe, aiming to set the standard for the care of captive wolves and provide them with as close to natural habitat as possible, while providing the opportunity to study, educate, and offer factual information to our visitors. Wolf Watch allows them to form their own opinions regarding this magnificent animal and hopefully expel some of the myths and misconceptions that still exist about wolves. For more information about Wolf Watch, please visit their website at www.wolfwatch.uk. Our second order of business comes from Eastern Oregon. It's about the counties that are dropping cyanide trap usage. Wildlife agencies halt practice after gray wolf accidentally killed, using cyanide traps to kill coyotes, which was halted in six eastern Oregon counties to protect the region's burgeoning wolf population. Following the unintentional killing of a gray wolf on February 10th in Wallowa County, an agreement between Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, the agency that manages gray wolf in eastern Oregon, and the USDA Wildlife Services, the federal agency that also controls predators on private land, M44s, spring-activated devices containing cyanide powder, will no longer be used to control predators in Baker, Wallowa, Union, Umatilla, Morrow, and Grant counties. A Shamrock Pack adult, OR48, was collared this winter on the Zumwalt Prairie, according to Mike Hansen, the Assistant Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife Wolf Biologist. Following his capture and being outfitted with a GPS collar, OR48 went on a solo trek that took him to Baker County. The wolf was then killed when he encountered an M44 on its return to Wallowa County. The trap was set by the U.S. Department of Agriculture and Wildlife Services, an agent in the area at the time, and it was not designated by the state as an area of known wolf activity. During the incident, Rick Hargrave, deputy administrator for the ODFW, Information and Education Division, said his agency was unaware of Wildlife Service's use of M44s. Michelle Dennehy, Wildlife Communications Coordinator, stated in an email after the incident that Wildlife Services informed the state that they had removed all M44s from all areas of known wolf activity identified by the ODFW. The agencies are continuing to work together to ensure information about wolf activity is communicated effectively. They quote, "We appreciate that Wildlife Services has voluntarily removed M44s. Doug Cotteman, ODFW Wildlife Division Administrator, says, "We also recognize we want to increase our communication between agencies. We want to develop a more effective system to ensure that Wildlife Services staff working in the areas with wolves know what ODFW knows about wolf activity. After the initial agreement between the state and federal agencies, Dave Williams, Oregon State Director of Wildlife Services, said ODFW wanted extension on the ban of M44s in as much of northeastern Oregon. We were requested in writing by ODFW to immediately discontinue use of M44s in Baker, Wallowa, Union, Umatilla, Grant, and Morrow counties, Williams says. Prior to that, the request we pulled up M44s in the area of known wolf activity and adjacent to those areas where we felt an addition margin of precaution was needed. Dennehy's email also said, ODFW does not have regulatory authority over the coyote control work of wildlife services or the use of M44s. However, the two agencies regularly work together on wildlife management, including wolf management. Wildlife services have been an important partner in ODFW management in wolf livestock conflict. Williams said, moving forward, it will be important for both agencies to share information on wolf sightings. We should know as much as ODFW where the wolves are so that we can continue to do our job and continue to use the tools in our toolbox the best we can. The producers and hosts of Wolf Dog Radio want to thank everyone from around the world that listens and supports Wolf Dog Radio. If you know of a newsworthy item that deals with wolves or wolf content animals, please send the information to us at info@wolfdogradio.com. That's the news. Have a good night.
Thank you, Deborah. And now our favorite vet tech is in the building. It's time for the vet tech is in.
The vet tech is in.
Welcome, friends. I'm Krista, and the vet tech is in. Tonight, I will be discussing an autoimmune disease known as IMHA. What is IMHA? IMHA is an autoimmune hemolytic anemia, or immune-mediated hemolytic anemia. It's a complex disease in which hemolysis, also known as the destruction of red blood cells, which leads to the release of hemoglobin from within the red blood cells into the blood plasma, occurs because of an anti-erythrocyte antibody production. Many causes of anemia exist in dogs and cats, so a clear distinction should be drawn between hemolytic anemia and IMHA. Hemolytic anemia are conditions in which red blood cells are destroyed at an accelerated rate and a normal regenerative response is seen in the bone marrow. In these non-immune-mediated conditions, red blood cells can be destroyed as a result of an inherited membrane and enzyme defects, increased fragility from oxidative damage, or metabolic causes such as hypophosphatemia or water intoxication. Traditional immune-mediated mechanisms do not mediate lysis in hemolytic anemia. Instead, destruction occurs because of things such as increased osmotic fragility, decreased red blood cell function in an alkalemic environment, or increased clearance from an oxidative damage. Unlike the treatment of immune-mediated anemia, immunosuppression is generally not used to treat hemolytic anemias. Therefore, it is important to find out whether an anemia has an underlying cause before just assuming it's an immune-mediated. Normally, red blood cells live about 4 months in dogs. As the cells age, they are removed and destroyed by other cells that are part of the immune system. New red blood cells are produced in the bone marrow at a rate that matches the destruction of older cells. In IMHA, the immune system destroys red blood cells prematurely, faster than the rate at which new ones can be produced. The name says it all. Anemia, which means reduced red blood cells, caused by hemolysis, which is the destruction by the body's own immune system. Unfortunately, dogs severely affected with this condition may die even with the best treatment. IMHA can occur at any age, but is most common in middle-aged female dogs. It may be mild and hardly noticeable, or it may be sudden in onset and severe. Usually, the kinds of signs you see are vague, such as poor appetite, weakness, listlessness, lack of energy. You may notice that your dog's gums are pale, or they may be yellowish to jaundice as a result of the breakdown of red blood cells. Your pet may have a rapid heartbeat and rapid breathing. One form of IMHA causes circulation problems in cooler peripheral parts of the body, so the ear or the tail tip or feet may become infected and dark in color. Reduced levels of circulating red blood cells mean reduced oxygen going to the tissues. Most dogs that die with this condition do so in the first few days due to kidney, liver, or heart failure because of a bleeding problem. Your veterinarian will suspect that your dog is anemic through physical examination. He or she will do some blood tests to find the cause. The diagnosis of IMHA is made by identifying antibodies on the surface of the red blood cells and ruling out other causes of anemia. This mostly occurs in the first few days due to kidney, liver, or heart failure or because of a bleeding problem. The goals of treatment are to slow the destruction of red blood cells and to support the dog while the red blood cell level has a chance to recover. Immunosuppressive therapy with steroids is given to slow red blood cell destruction, initially at high doses, which are gradually tapered over several weeks as red blood cell levels stabilize and begin to rise again. If red blood cell levels continue to fall despite steroid therapy, other immunosuppressive drugs may be given. Blood transfusions are needed when the red blood cell level is critically low, typically when the dog's hematocrit is 14% or lower. Although the new cells will also be destroyed at the same rate, the transfusion will buy some time for the dog while his or her own blood cell levels are recovering. Dogs that recover from an episode of IMHA will likely experience future relapses. Dogs that have been diagnosed with IMHA should not be used for breeding, and it is preferable to avoid breeding their close relatives as well. One thing that I did not write down that I want to mention is that most canines can receive a blood transfusion without any cross-matching of blood. But upon the second transfusion, it's always important to make sure you cross-match blood to make sure that there's not going to be a reaction from the transfusion. And during that transfusion, typically the nurses that take care of the pet will monitor the vital signs to ensure that there's not going to be a reaction every 5 minutes for the entire transfusion. If you or anyone else notices any kind of symptomatic issues in your pet, such as rapid breathing, that's the first typical symptom you need to immediately take your pet to the veterinarian and have it seen about. The most important thing is to always seek medical advice. Never go to Google, never ask your friends on social media. Always, always contact your veterinarian if you have any kind of signs or symptoms that your pet may be sick. It's never too late to go to the vet, but it's always too late to wait. The first mistake that we all make is to think that we have another second. Please, please seek medical advice. Thank you for listening. Remember to always seek professional advice from a veterinarian with any medical issues or concerns with your animals. I'm Krista Ward. Until next time on The Vet Tech Is In.
Wolf Dog Radio is proud to present an interactive portion where you can send your questions and have them personally answered by Cat Wolf Dancer. Just send your questions to askcat@wolfdogradio.com.
Well, everybody, the clock on my iPhone tells me we've reached that point in the show when it's time for us to Ask Cat.
Hi, this is Ask Cat, and our first question is from Aaron. How big a pen would you have for a wolf dog, and what would you have in the pen so that they would have more of an existence in case you had, for instance, a heavy week of work and need to work more and spend less time with them? I'm thinking about getting a wolf dog, possibly a rescue. I make enough money to support a wolf dog, but on occasion sometimes my work gives me a heavy load. P.S., I love your show. P.S., Aaron, we love you too. Well, I built mine based on the knowledge that it takes a wolf 100 feet to reach full speed at a run. Using that formula, about 120 feet should be long enough to get onto a whole long run and say, 50 feet wide. Since wolf dogs are very athletic, 8 feet tall is the minimum for height. You can go higher, or if you have a climber, you can also install an electric fence along the top of the fence line, as well as a string of hot wire about 2 feet from the ground. This also protects against fence testing. I like a more natural look in my yards, so I have trees in mine. I suggest protecting the trunks if you have young trees, because wolf dogs apparently think that everything should be taste tested. I make wire barrels built around the trunks of the trees, and that can save replanting later. Some of the things that you can build are structures for your wolf dog, sort of like playground equipment. Wolf dogs really like to get up high on top of things. So some things to be aware of when building play yard equipment are railings around the perimeter of the top observation deck, so there is some kind of a barrier to avoid a fall. Your wolf dog can seriously injure themselves by jumping off too high from a deck or falling off when they're during play. Another idea is to build a ramp with footing slats screwed into the ramp itself so that they don't slip. Especially as they get older, they're going to still want to get up high, but it becomes more difficult as we age to be as athletic as we were when we were young. Trust me on this. An old non-steel belted radio, on a rope is a fun toy. I go to a hunting supply store and I pick up a few different kinds of scents like deer musk and pheasant and rabbit and other prey attractants, as well as some old cheap perfume, and I spray the tires, switching it up every couple few weeks. They find this really interesting and will often push and swing the tire to get a better whiff. Keep your mustard and ketchup and condiment packages from restaurants and smear on trees or an old log or a post. That's very fun scent play. Our producer, Greg, says his kids used to adore hot mustard, so he would smear some on the bottom of his boots and walk around their yard and laugh as they tracked him and scent rolled. Jolly balls are pretty good entertainment, especially the ones that you can apply scents to. Some have a compartment that you can open and drop a few drops of whatever scent you got handy. A stock tank or even a cheap kitty wading pool is also lots of fun for wolf dogs. The wading pool is not going to last long, but even the deconstruction will be fun. And then, of course, remember to schedule in some extra time before you have to go on an extended work project, as well as after you get home for a long walk or training exercises or tug games or just lounging in the sun with your woofer in your lap. You are the most greatest, most valuable resource that your wolf dog knows. I hope this gives you some ideas. And the next question is from, I believe it's pronounced Arna, from Nepal, Italy. My wolf dog keeps digging in my yard. I'm thinking of having a culvert buried in the yard for him to play in. What is better, rubber or concrete? How do I entice him to use it once it's put in? Is this even a good idea? Well, it's absolutely a good idea. I would myself use concrete. Rubber, like plastic, is a food group. Make sure that wolf dogs will chew anything. And if they can get their teeth into it, then they get on this, I must destroy. It's so shiny, let's kill it. Make sure that it's sturdy, and they will find it lots and lots of fun. Also, concrete will keep cool in the heat of the summer and some of the warmth in the winter. So anything that you can do, and I really love the idea of a concrete bunker type of a thing, is to build a sandbox for your woofer, just like a child's sandbox filled with clean sand. Show your woofer that it's fine to dig here by hiding bones or toys in the sandbox. I hope this gives you some interesting ideas about enrichment with your containments, and we'll see you next show. That's it for Ask Cat.
And now a word from Blue Buffalo and Cancer Awareness.
Veterinary oncology deals with the diagnosis and the treatment of cancer in animals. Cancer is the number one medical concern of pet owners, and it is the leading cause of death in older cats and dogs. My name is Dr. Jerry Post. I am a veterinary oncologist, and this is the Veterinary Cancer Center in Norwalk, Connecticut. Some of the things that I would advise every owner who has a pet to look for would be lumps that are changing in size, shape, or consistency. Enlarged lymph nodes that are present and are not going away. And once they reach mid to older age, I would recommend abdominal ultrasound as well as chest x-rays as screening tests so that if your pet does develop cancer, you can detect it at a much earlier stage. Much of the same common sense recommendations that are made for people are also made for pets. Keeping your pet active, keeping your pet at a healthy nutritional plane, and keeping your pet fit are all incredibly important whether your pet has cancer or not. Cancers in animals occur the same way that they do in people, and they are affected by the same things. In other words, the environment that they live in, the food that they eat, the water that they drink, and the genetic makeup of the individuals all work together to give every individual, dog, cat, or person, a cancer risk. Many of the drugs that we use in veterinary oncology are the same drugs that are used in human oncology, and so there is an expense to them. We typically use the cancer drugs that are most commonly used for pediatric cancers. And a lot of those are the older, less expensive drugs. Now, with the advent of oral chemotherapy, with low-dose metronomic chemotherapy, we have so many more options available to us than ever before. One of the best studies undergoing right now is the Golden Retriever Longevity Study. And this looks at golden retrievers over a period of the next 13 years to try and find out what are the risk factors that are leading to increased cancer risk. The Blue Buffalo Foundation for Cancer Research and the Pet Cancer Awareness Program have done more to expand people's awareness of cancer in pet animals than any foundation that we've ever worked with. The area of specialty medicine within veterinary medicine is one of the largest growing segments of veterinary medicine. And it really is in response to the desire of the pet-owning public for more advanced testing, for more advanced treatment, and for increased specialization. We now have, again, oral therapies, low-dose chemotherapy, a melanoma vaccine that harnesses the body's own immune system to attack the cancer. We have targeted chemotherapies that are given orally that target particular molecular or genetic defects that are found only within cancer cells. Cancer is not a death sentence. Most cancers are incredibly manageable, and it is rare that we can't do something to increase the quantity and or quality of a pet who is diagnosed with cancer. Having done this for 25 years, the future looks brighter than ever before. There are advances being made in molecular diagnostics, in genomics, in proteomics, that gives me such incredible hope that we will be able to treat and eventually cure the majority of cancers that we see. Now, more and more of the best scientists in the country are looking to comparative oncology, the study of cancers in animals, dogs and cats, for information on how to better diagnose and treat cancers in people. My wish for every animal and every person that leaves here is that they leave here with hope. hope that we can do something to increase their pet's quality and quantity of life.
This is Linda Michaels, and you are listening to Wolf Dog Radio.
May is Pet Cancer Awareness Month. However, if anyone has had an animal with cancer, every month is Cancer Awareness Month. Blue Buffalo has teamed up with Petco for Pet Cancer Awareness Month. Every May, we ask pet parents to make a donation at any Petco or Unleashed by Petco register, or to donate online with this year's goal of raising $2 million. Our efforts have raised over $11 million to help in the fight against pet cancer, making the Blue Buffalo Foundation and the Petco Foundation the number one contributors to pet cancer research. Let's all do our part. Please join Blue Buffalo and Petco in this worthy cause. Thank you. And now it's time for everyone's favorite Rage and Cajun, Jerry Mills.
Welcome to the Wolf Tejas Den. I got a few things I wanted to discuss and a couple of things just to share. You know, I think every episode of just what to read or write to share with y'all, and this week's episode is going to be kind of informal and give you some thoughts. Well, first off, I'm going to give y'all some definitions of some words. These words define what it takes to be a good wolf dog owner. You absolutely got to have these things going on or you're going to fail your animal to some lesser or greater degree, and you don't want to do that enough. Passion, strong and barely controllable emotion, an intense desire or enthusiasm for something. Patience, the capacity to accept or tolerate delay, trouble, or suffering without getting angry or upset. Dedication, feeling of very strong support or loyalty to someone or something. The willingness to give a lot of time and energy to something because it's important. Fortitude, strength in the face of adversity. Love. Love is complete acceptance and allows something to be exactly as they are without any belief that they would be better if they were different. Love has no conditions. You can't stop loving something because of the things that they do. Love don't need nothing in return because there is nothing that it needs. Now I relate these words, passion, patience, dedication, fortitude, and love, directly to our relationships with our animals. These are the key ingredients for success. Passion. Show patience. Have dedication. Exhibit fortitude. And show love for your animals. If you're lacking any of this, y'all need to work on it. If you aren't willing to give 100% in each one of these when you're thinking about getting a wolf dog, please don't. Egos and wolf dogs don't work, and we all know who pays that price. Now, here's something different for you. I wrote this back in 2002 for my friend's turtle and her high-content Arctic wolf dog named Gage. It's called Arctic Dream. The moon seemed implanted in an ice blue Arctic sky. The icy breeze whispered of the winter by and by. His dense white fur ruffled with each passing of the breeze as to call upon the snow to fall for winter and relief. He lay upon his perch way up high amongst the rocks. He overlooked his land to the horizon where it stopped. The Arctic high country was his land. And he was a king upon a throne, and he a noble king to wander far and wide across his home. He lifted his head and called to me to join him in his travels. But as I raised my head to join him, my mind became unraveled. I could not join my noble friend, as real as it may have seemed, for Gage was sleeping here with me, and it was just an Arctic dream. Well, to conclude tonight's episode, excuse me, I'm going to tell you all about a man and his dog. This is a Cajun story, and it's for Truya. Thibodeau was a man that loved his cold beer, but never had much money. One day, he walked into T-Boy's bar and grill, leading this baggy old flop-eared hound dog. T-Boy and said, "Tib, get that dog out of this bar. What the hell are you doing?" Thibodeau said, "I can't did that. Somebody might steal this dog, and he's worth a lot of money here." T-Boy said, "Don't. Nobody want that old dog. Get him out of here." Tib said, "Man, this dog can talk. Give me a beer and I'll show you." T-Boy said, "Man, you crazy. I'm going to give you a beer, and that dog better said something here." Well, Thibodeau drank that beer down nice and slow. When he got through, he looked down at the dog and said, "Fido, now, you spell that P-H-I-D-A-U-X, Fido. I want you to look straight up and tell me what you see." That old long-eared dog looked up and said, "Roof, roof." That bartender said, "Get that dog out of here, man." Thibodeau said, "Whoa, wait a minute. That dog is smart in him. He can say something else. Give me one more beer and I'll prove it." T-Boy said, "One more beer. And that dog had better talk this time." Thibodeau drank that beer slow and then looked at the dog and said, "Fido, I'm going to ask you a question. Now, this is very important. I want you to think hard now. Who's the best baseball player of all times?" Well, that old dog cocked his head this way, and that old dog cocked his head that way. Then he shook his head and flopped his ears, flop, 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 flop. Looked up at Thibodeau and said, "Roof, roof." T-Boy come around that bar and chunked old Thibodeau out on the porch. He grabbed that old dog by his baggy hide and chunked him out there, too. The dog laid down the porch looking at Thibodeau and said, "What's the matter? Was it Willie Mays, huh?" And that's for true, yeah. Well, I hope y'all enjoyed tonight's Wolf Tejas Den. C'est bon? C'est bon.
No going back now. Can't change your mind.
Join us on April 18th as Wolf Dog Radio speaks with Natalie Engstrom, the co-founder of World of Lupines Federation in the United Kingdom. I want to thank Paula Picara and Steve Wastel from Apex Protection Project for being our guests tonight. Preserving our natural resources and presenting an educational-based format cracks the myth of these animals and gives an accurate portrayal of what they are and can be. Teaching the next generation is but one of our hopes for maintaining a positive environment for wolf content animals. Please visit apexprotectionproject.org for more information about Apex and Sedona Wolf Week. Plan on visiting with these great folks in Sedona, Arizona on April 20th through the 23rd. Tell Paula and Steve you listen to the show on Wolf Dog Radio. If you have any questions about the show, please email us at questions@wolfdogradio.com and check out our website at www.wolfdogradio.com for more information. Sacrifices come in many packages. It may be your last $5 you put in the Save Fido Fund. It could be donating a used tractor to a worthy cause, or it could be changing your life to help those with no voice. Tonight's show focused on two people who live, breathe, walk, and talk the protection of wolves and wolf dogs. They believe all species deserve respect and the right to live. Wolves matter. For those of us who cannot do as Paula and Steve do, we still have a major role to play, and that is to help those who have drawn a line in the sand that says the carnage and misrepresentation must stop. We can do this in so many ways. We can donate time, money, or supplies. We can also just send such dedicated folks a simple note that says, "Thank you for all that you do." People who do what Paula and Steve do may feel down sometimes. Endings are not always happy, goals not always reached, but simple words and deeds of encouragement let them know they are not alone, and we see the good that they do. It energizes them for another day. We all have a part in this play we call life. Rise up from your chair and stop being one of the watchers and the waiters. Join them on the stage of doing and helping. If you already are doing so, you have our sincere appreciation. We hope you have many others join you. This is Krista Ward wishing you all a pleasant evening. Good night, and thank you for listening from our den to yours.
You are listening to Wolf Dog Radio.